You're listening to Engage on Central Florida Public Media. I'm Sharon Stone. On April 17th of last year, a student at Florida State University began firing a gun outside of the campus student union. After 3 minutes of shooting, two people were dead and six others injured. The accused gunman was shot and killed by police. Following the investigation, Florida Attorney General James Uffmeyer said at an April 21st press conference in Tampa that prior to the tragedy, the shooter had consulted with AI provider ChatGPT, asking for advice on what kind of gun to use and when and where to carry out an attack to produce the most victims. Uffmeyer also announced he was opening an investigation into ChatGPT and its parent company, OpenAI, to determine whether they may have played a role in the shooting. This week, Uffmeyer said the investigation has expanded after the suspect was found to have used ChatGPT to ask questions about how to get away with the murders. Currently, artificial intelligence developers are loosely regulated under a patchwork of state, federal, and international guidelines. At the national level, the Trump administration has said that AI should be regulated at the federal level. During a sit-down interview with Fox Business host Maria Bartiromo 2 weeks ago, the president acknowledged a role for government oversight while also emphasizing a desire to give the industry room to grow.
Should government have some safeguards? Should there be a kill switch for some of these AI agents?
There should be. But let me say, we're leading in AI. We're leading China by a lot, actually. We're building plants that nobody ever imagined before. And it's going to be a tremendous, bigger than the internet. It's going to be tremendous. And there are always difficulties when you're at this stage of something. But, you know, when you mentioned banking, it could also make banking much bigger, much safer, much more efficient.
In Tallahassee, Governor DeSantis has been proposing an AI bill of rights for consumers that would restrict use by minors, require greater transparency, and create avenues for legal liability in the industry. DeSantis articulated his concerns on Monday while speaking with podcaster Graham Bensinger.
Some of these chatbots have done things that are very, very troubling in terms of sexualization with minors, goading them into committing suicide. Why is that happening? Because these are things done by human beings. They are going to not only exemplify the flaws of human nature, but in many respects, magnify the flaws.
DeSantis went on to explain why he feels it's the state's responsibility to pass and enforce his AI Bill of Rights.
Does Congress have the authority to pass a federal statute providing a framework for artificial intelligence? Yes, they do have the authority. Have they exercised that authority? No. Will they exercise that authority? I think almost assuredly they would not be able to agree on what should happen with that. So in the interim, should states be kneecapped from doing it?
The bill was presented in the legislative session this year, but it didn't go anywhere. The governor called for lawmakers to revive it during the special session this week. On Tuesday, the Speaker of the House, Republican Daniel Perez, removed AI regulations from the special session docket, saying, quote, "I understand the administrator's concerns about wanting to protect children, but we have clearly understood that the President of the United States issued an executive order indicating that the federal government should take charge of AI policies in this country," end quote. So who should be held accountable when people use AI in a way that harms themselves or others? Joining us to tackle the legal and ethical implications of artificial intelligence are Daryl Scriven, the director of Florida A&M University's Centers and Institutes, and the former head of FAMU's Cyber Policy Institute. And Jonathan Beaver, the co-founder and director of the UCF Center for Ethics and the co-director of the undergraduate certificate program in AI, Big Data, and Human Impacts. Beaver begins with his perspective on what responsibility AI developers and providers have to consumers to deliver a safe product.
What I want to say is, AI companies owe U.S. consumers and consumers generally a lot, right? They've developed these tools that have these robust implications in the way we experience the world, the way we relate to one another, the way we relate to online systems. And yet what they've given us in terms of their implications and safeguards has sort of trailed off. There are all these fascinating to me cases about the ways that AI industry partners have developed really strong safeguard programs and then slowly degraded those over time in this step-by-step fashion, I think because of corporate interests, profit motive interests. 2021, Google's co-lead of ethical AI, in a very famous instance now, her name was Timnit Gebru. She stepped down from Google after writing a paper about the significant risks of LLMs, and this was in 2021. 2023, Microsoft's ethics and society team was wholly laid off. May of 24, OpenAI's team that was focused on safety of platforms was disbanded. And then just a few months ago in February, Anthropic's AI safety researcher quit, sharing a resignation on X that made national headlines, saying that their AI was part of this interconnected crisis at the global level, and he needed to step away. So there are all these really good intentions, I think, that were in place at first that slowly have been degraded for all kinds of reasons.
Daryl, legally, what obligations do these companies have right now? Who is holding a developer like ChatGPT legally responsible and accountable?
Well, the short answer is nobody right now, because we're in this kind of limbo situation where normally we think of human beings as having agency and we think of technology as tools. And that might have been true before artificial intelligence. And so now we have this third category, it seems like, in the middle that fills this gap where it's not quite human agency. So I think they're going to have a tough time pinning agency on some of these AI tools. At the same time, it's not just a passive kind of thing like an encyclopedia that you just read. It's something much more active than that. It's suggestive. It's interactive. It's almost like partnering. So there is a duty of care. If you look at the legal profession, this concept of knew or should have known, anticipating harms, we're going to see people press cases to say, companies owe us a standard, a duty of care, because they knew or should have known that harms would arise given the complexity and capabilities of this technology. So that's going to have to be hashed out in the courts to see exactly where it falls. But just like tobacco companies knew some things that they didn't disclose, I think we're going to see some of those arguments being made for what companies owe us as a standard of care.
You know, it strikes me as it's a shame that there's like this reactive attitude. We have got to wait for terrible things to happen and then the law can react to it.
Yeah.
So, Daryl, if someone acts on harmful advice from AI, is there a path to hold the company criminally responsible? I'm thinking about these cases we've heard about where users with intentions of self-harm interact with AI and later take their own lives.
Yeah. So there is a path. I think there are two ways to approach it. One is this defective product path that basically says your product engaged in such egregious behavior that it aided and abetted, it almost was an accomplice to this egregious harm that happened. Okay. I think the companies are going to argue back that our product is more like free speech. It's more like an encyclopedia, where it just has information in it and, you know, people are free to access that information, but you don't hold a publisher accountable because of the information in a book. It's just free speech. And I think that's what they're going to argue. That may hold up until we get to these agentic systems that not only just reply to you, but they can also initiate and engage in activities for you or take its own almost like volition to accomplish something. It's a different area of loss, but there's a pathway. I think the defective product path has been the way that we've held car manufacturers accountable and other kinds of companies when torts or harms occur.
There's a metaphoric slipperiness in there too, Daryl, because it's not just that these things are seen as products, but they're seen as you say, collaborators, agents of some kind. So the product slipperiness alongside the agential slipperiness makes for an interesting space legally, I mean, philosophically, but legally in particular.
It does.
We're speaking with Dr. Jonathan Beaver, a professor of philosophy and director of the Center for Ethics at UCF, and Dr. Daryl Scriven, director of Florida A&M University's Centers and Institutes and the former leader of FAMU's Cyber Policy Institute. Jonathan, what does responsible facilitation of AI usage at the consumer level look like? Is there a place for these chatbots in the lives of people under the age of 18?
I think there is. I know Florida's AI Bill of Rights initiative is proposing that there isn't, right? That young people in particular should not be allowed to interact with chatbots, for instance. UCF's model has been to build what our university is calling fluency, what I would call a sort of ethical and procedural literacy, but the idea that our students are being asked to engage the tool in order to understand it. And I think maybe that's, for me, the pin in all of this, right? That young people have to have a level of literacy or fluency such that they understand potential benefits and risks of using these tools. And if we can verify that there are, which is becoming part of the educational pathway, then young people have access to these tools, which can be transformative. But I think that's a complicated tension for me between that ethical and procedural literacy, because the tools are capable of so much.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think the technology is going to become an extension of us, the same way our phones have become extensions of us, so that young people are going to have, we've called chatbots or beings or AI, whatnots that grow with them. They develop and grow with them such that when they're interacting in education or in the vocational world, then the question is going to be, how have you developed yourself and your AI capabilities in order to perform functions and whatnot? It's going to be a question of who has spent time developing their capacities as well as the technology. So to talk about denying or barring or whatnot, I just think the same conversation we're having about cheating, it's not recognizing that the world that we knew is over now. It's in the history now. It's a new history. And part of it is we're trying to protect ourselves and young people. Another part of it is we have to accept that we're in a new reality. And so we have to reimagine what that means to be in. It's going to mean still we have to put regulations in place, but it also, like the calculators in class or the phones in class, we see how silly that is now on some level in some settings. But at that time, we thought the only way was just to deny. And it just proved to be a fool's errand.
The sense that there's an analogy between calculators and AI is one I think I'd like to challenge a little bit, right? When calculators were used in the mathematics context, there was a pushback, obviously, and it did externalize how we did mathematics. It gave us a tool that was outside of us. It changed the way we remember numbers and the relationship between numbers. And that is certainly the case with generative AI. But I think generative AI is much more robust in terms of its agentic possibilities than the calculator is. It can do a much wider range of things. And it's also probabilistic in a way that a traditional calculator is not. And I think that's another challenge that a lot of students, although they're starting to see otherwise very quickly, students, I think initially were enamored by the idea that this was a conversational bot that they could talk with rather than something that was giving them outputs based on probabilistic calculation.
Looking forward, with this AI regulation and the governor's proposed AI Bill of Rights, is that something that states can handle, or does it have to happen on a federal level?
Mm-hmm. I mean, the current federal administration thinks it has to happen on a federal level. The White House AI action plan and its executive orders are very much tuned to the states get out of the way. There's got to be a national level approach to this. And this is challenging the current regulatory landscape for what it is in the U.S., which is currently state by state. So I think the White House has one vision. States have another vision. They're very diverse. And that's also tertiarily a third version of that's happening at the international level. Mm-hmm. The EU's AI Act has been out in force since August of 2024. There are international standards now. So there are international, national, and state level regulatory gateways in place. What that does to bills like Florida's AI Bill of Rights, it will be interesting to see.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think there are three levels of concern. And the narrative we've been hearing from the national level is this is about national defense. We can't put regulations on it. We're in a race with the world. This is an inevitability. And if we stifle this creativity, such and such and such. The state conversation has been about protection of citizens. And, you know, that's where a conflict of interest is brewing. And so what happens when those two interests clash and then you have national actors and branches that can say, hey, we're not going to have any regulations. Internationally, EU is rule rich in terms of some of these regulations and governance structures. We're technology rich, but we're rule poor. And it almost seems like it's intentional by design in order to not stifle creativity and a race to the top as it's been built.
Definitely does seem like there's a beg forgiveness rather than permission ethos around big tech that drives a lot of US policy.
Agreed.
Daryl Scriven is the director of FAMU's Centers and Institutes. Jonathan Beaver is the co-founder and director of UCF's Center for Ethics. Thank you both for joining us.
Great.
That's great.
Enjoy it.